It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Recycling rules, they are confusing. They are complicated. We're learning why a small amount of recyclables actually get recycled. That plastic milk jug you just tossed in the bin, does it really get a new life? According to the latest data available by the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, in 2018, Americans generated more than 292 million tons of waste. About a third of that was recycled and composted. A third. Join in 800-642-1234. Winston Che Chagrin is a reporting fellow for the New York Times covering climate change and the environment. Winston, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Kate. I'm so thrilled to be talking about recycling with you.
Yes. And so with hundreds of millions of tons of plastic alone produced in our world every year, do policymakers know roughly how much can be recycled?
Well, can be recycled is, I think, tricky. We know how much is, or we have good estimates for how much is actually being recycled. You've obviously just said it's around 30% of our total waste stream. But in terms of plastics themselves, it's actually quite a small number. It's only around 8%, so less than 10% of all the plastics produced or generated in the United States are actually recycled. That's compared to, say, you know, more than two-thirds of the paper and cardboard that we generate here in this country.
What about the rise of single-use plastics? What effect has that had on our mindset, on the waste stream, as you look at this recycling juggernaut?
Right. So single-use packaging is obviously a huge challenge for all the people who sort our recycling and then ultimately have to find waste markets for it. I think part of the challenge is that we historically have seen recycling as this government service, and as opposed to what it really is, which is a commodities market. You know, recycling really is based on economics, whether or not people who sort recycling can find end markets for the products that we generate. And I think that shift in mindset is really, really key. And that's one thing that a lot of people who work in this industry want to stress to the public, that products have to have an end market in order for them to be recycled. And certain products already do. Things like plastic water bottles, peanut butter jars, those already have a much higher market than, say, cling film or plastic paper, plastic bags.
So is that having that reliable resale market for whatever material that is that one of the reasons, would you say, why recycling rules just really change from city to city, from region to region? What are the dynamics there? Why can't there be more consistency?
Absolutely. So that's actually a fascinating part of the history of recycling, is this kind of fracturing of recycling. So just for general context, states typically handle or set recycling policy, but really it's local governments, so municipal or county governments, that handle the contracts for waste haulers, and those waste haulers then have to find sorting facilities nearby. And it's whether or not your sorting facility, your local sorting facility, can find an end market for its products. And so in a place like New York City, where I live, we have a really large sorting facility, and they have maybe a little bit more pull and are able to find more markets for more types of products than a sorting facility in a much smaller sorting facility in a more rural area. And so that really is what sets the policy in whatever local area you live in. And I think that that's one reason why we're seeing more and more state level policies as well, to try to at least on the state level, make recycling more uniform.
A little more uniform and consistent.
Exactly.
Yes. I'm going to reintroduce you a moment as we talk about why it is so confusing to recycle plastic. We have New York Times reporter Winston Chagrin, and you can join in at 800-642-1234 on recycling, what you see in your community and what the challenges and barriers are, even in your own household. 800-642-1234. Winston, why is plastic difficult to recycle?
Well, I guess there's why is it confusing and why is it difficult to recycle? So to take the latter point, there are so many different types of plastics. Mm-hmm. There's everything from, you know, your plastic bottle or your peanut butter jar or your laundry detergent, all the way to cling film, you know, saran wrap type plastics. And the recyclability of those different, they all exist under the general umbrella of plastic, but the technology available is to sort between them, and also to then mechanically break them down is different. So we also have to think about plastic as different types of entities. And what you see in the chasing arrow symbol and that little number is going to dictate whether or not, you know, it's going to tell you what type of plastic it is. And then of course, you know, those different types of plastics, number one and number two, are going to have a much higher market.
Yes. Explain the numbering a little bit more and which number we should probably have more reliance on, because we know that there may be more of a market or it may be more universally recycled.
Sure. So number one and number two, if you see a number one and number two within that chasing arrow symbol, those three arrows, those have a much higher market. Those are, you know, according to the latest EPA figures, it's estimated that we recycle, you know, close to a third of those. Of course, you know, all the way to number seven, which is a catch-all, it could refer to many different types of things, many different types of plastics. You know, those aren't really being recycled at all.
I finished off a big bottle of olive oil last night. To the last drop, I got everything out. And when I tossed the plastic bottle into recycling, I thought there are remnants of oil in this container that are beyond my control. Will that hurt its chances of being recycled? How much do we need to rinse out our plastic before putting it into recycling?
Well, so we talked to recycling experts, in the course of reporting our stories on plastic recycling. And they say, don't kill yourself, you know, with something like olive oil, oils, or, you know, peanut butter jars where there's like some sticky peanut butter left in the bottom. Mm-hmm. They maybe just put a little bit of dish soap, shake it with some water, and whatever you're able to get out that way is probably good enough.
Does that having the remnants though of food or other materials on that plastic, does that decrease its ability to, it decrease its chances of being recycled, or isn't there much of a connection there?
You know, as I just said, people generally say if you're able to get most of it out, mm-hmm. Then it's not going to hurt its chances. Of course, you know, these products are being sent through, you know, conveyor belts with scanners, and those scanners are what's sorting it between different types of products. And so if it's so covered in food that the scanners can't detect what it is, then of course it's not going to be sorted correctly. And then it's not going to end up in the right, what's called a bale, for resale. So, you know, so long as the scanner can read it, it should be okay.
We're discussing barriers to recycling. When a third of what is currently collected gets recycled, we have New York Times journalist Winston Chagrin, who's been looking into the cycle, the bottlenecks in the system. Join in on recycling what you've wondered about. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about challenges to recycling and keeping waste out of landfills. The EPA set its first ever national recycling goal in 2020. That is to increase the national recycling rate to 50% by 2030. Will it happen? Join in on recycling as you see it. 800-642-1234. We have New York Times journalist Winston Che Chagrin, who's been writing about recycling and reporting on it and stays with us. We are talking there about the chasing arrows symbol that can be confusing since it doesn't mean the plastic may be recyclable in your area, that there may be a market for it. California recently restricted which products can use the symbol. What do you make of this restriction? What could it do?
So this is actually a really interesting development. It comes on the back of previous truth in advertising labeling attempts that were more suggestions and guidelines as opposed to legally enforceable. It has the potential to ensure that everything that gets sold in California that has that symbol will actually be recyclable. There are really high bars for what can, after this law, there will be really high bars for what can actually have that, have the chasing arrow symbol on it. Of course, California is also such a huge market for the entire country that there could be a ripple effect for everybody, since producers don't just make products for the state of California. They make it for, for the most part, for a region or for the entire country. Mm-hmm. So it could be huge. It could mean that we really do see the chasing arrow symbol only on products that are actually being recycled and have an end market.
When you say truth in recycling, I think about truth in what's going into my recycling bin. And I might look at something tossed into our recycling bin with a skeptical eye and tell a family member that they're wish cycling and they're hoping they're doing the right thing by tossing it into recycling. What effect has single stream recycling had on the overall system, that you found in your reporting?
So just to back up, single stream recycling refers to the idea that you put everything, your paper, plastic, and metal all in the same bin. Mm-hmm. That was actually a 90s development to ensure that, it was thought that if you did that, more people would recycle more things. Of course, what's happened is that more things are getting mixed together and you will have things like paper in the same bin as, like maybe a recently rinsed plastic, which kind of makes the paper start to disintegrate. So that's had the effect of actually worsening the market for paper products.
And so if it worsens the market for paper products, that brings all of recycling down, I would imagine. That can really have a ripple effect.
Yes. And so recyclers that we've spoken to do prefer having what's called a dual stream recycling system, where you have your paper separate from your metals and plastics. It's interesting because in some other countries, including Japan and Korea, in some cities and municipalities, they'll actually have a really elaborate recycling stream system where people will come to a central location and sort their recycling, not just, into these two different buckets, paper and then metal and plastics, but actually, six different types of plastics. And so you will get really, really high quality recycling that way. And it's much easier for the recycling sorters and ultimately, for the recycling sorters to find end markets for things that are sorted really well.
That scenario that you pose there really seems like the burden of recycling is put on the consumers, the everyday consumers. Is that the way forward? And why is that?
So historically, the burden has fallen on, individuals to sort their recycling, to know what's recyclable. And also the burden has also been on the taxpayer, so individuals, to pay for recycling systems, to pay for the pickup of their recycling and also for the sorting of their recycling. But there's been a real shift in the past few years. And we have now what are called producer responsibility laws. Those have been adopted in now 4 states. And those states that have adopted, that's Maine, Oregon, Colorado, and now California very recently, want to shift the burden of recycling from the taxpayer, the individual household, to the producers of packaging.
What and might happen?
So under that scenario, producers are going to be charged a fee. So anybody that puts any packaging on the market in that state will be charged a fee based on how much packaging they're putting into that state. And that the idea is that that fee will then pay for recycling programs. So hopefully it will take the burden off of the taxpayer to pay for recycling programs.
We're talking with New York Times reporter Winston Che Chagrin about why recycling has barriers and why it's complex, how the system is different at different municipalities, and what is happening in your community with recycling. Join in your perception and what you've encountered, 800-642-1234. So a few years ago, the EPA sets this goal to get the national recycling rate to 50% by 2030. Is this realistic?
It's really hard to say whether or not that goal is realistic. It certainly seems like we have quite a ways to go. You know, I also think we have to think about different classes of products differently. As I said at the top of the hour, when you look at the situation, so different for paper, say, and plastics. Paper is already being recycled at well over that 50% mark. You know, it's more than 2/3 of paper and cardboard products are being recycled. For cardboard, it's very, very, very high. For plastics, however, it's less than 10%. So, you know, I think the question is, how do we get more plastics being recycled? And I think that's going to be the real challenge.
It sounds like the big gap then is with plastics, because, you know, if the EPA is estimating that up to 3/4 of our waste is recyclable, we're way off that mark. So there's a big gap somewhere, and it looks like all signs are kind of pointing at plastic.
Right. There's also, I mean, of course, there are other classes of products that we haven't really talked about, like glass, and the recycling rates for that are also not great at the moment. Metals, and of course, different types of metals, those all have different recycling rates, but those are typically much higher than that, you know, less than 10% that we were talking about with plastics. And within plastics, as we said, you know, there are things that are already very recycled. Plastic water bottles, numbers, when you see the number 1 and the number 2, those are recycled at much higher rates than other things. And so I think one thing that these producer responsibility laws, which we're seeing in more and more states, there's this mechanism in them to incentivize companies to redesign their products to be more recyclable. Mm-hmm. And so those types of measures might really make a difference.
Let's take a call. Jim in Hartford. Jim, hi. What's your perspective?
Yeah, good morning. I just want to make a comment about your guest's last comment about you know, putting the price burden on the packaging company. That's only going to get passed on to the taxpayer and each consumer. I think recycling has been falling away for so many years. It's not really working out as planned. From what I've read and what I've seen in landfills, landfills are more efficient when they're actually producing the methane for energy. The whole idea of having trucks and people go to these buildings to do recycling, it's kind of a net zero prospect. You know, landfills do the best when they produce the methane for energy, and that's what it is. If you go into a landfill, if you've ever been to a landfill in the cell.
And Jim, because we're short on time, I want Winston to be able to respond. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, to your point, Jim, thank you so much for your call. You are right that, of course, the burden of paying for these products will be passed on to not necessarily the taxpayer, but the consumer. So the person who's buying that, you know, soda bottle or whatever will. And I think those are two different groups. Mm-hmm. It's not that everyone will be paying for it. It's the people who individually buy those products. And the other key part of this producer responsibility law, which I was saying before, is just this mechanism that a lot of states have added, which is to incentivize companies to redesign their products. Historically, you know, companies didn't design their products with recyclability in mind. Mm-hmm. But now they're being asked to redesign their products.
And that's changing. We're yes. out of time. Winston, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate, for having me on.
Winston Che Chagrin, reporting fellow for The New York Times. We have a link to her piece at wpr.org/mornings. News is next on the Ideas Network.